a rare moment of togetherness. Time to review the week in state politics. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. It's Friday. That means time to get caught up on some of what happened in the relatively wild, relatively unpredictable world of North Carolina politics. Here for our discussion are Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation. We recorded this conversation Thursday afternoon. Senate Leader Phil Berger, House Speaker Tim Moore, and Governor Roy Cooper gathered Wednesday in the same place at the same time for an exceptional congratulatory moment. A deal was reached to reopen schools. The bill that they were celebrating requires districts to reopen elementary schools and also allows districts to offer an in-person option for middle and high schools. Two-part question. Are you good with the deal? And is this a clear example of bipartisan compromise and good governance? Rob?
I think there are still some legitimate concerns about the bill. And I think there are a lot of educators who feel sort of justifiably concerned about, you know, putting their lives and health on the line, especially since we still don't really have adequate public school, public health infrastructure when it comes to ventilation and facilities and school nurses and all that kind of stuff. But I do think it's encouraging that finally the leaders of the state have come together. You know, I was struck. I almost felt like it was, I don't know if you guys aren't probably old enough to remember this. I remember the moment at which, you know, the Yasser Arafat and who was it? Yitzhak Rabin shook hands in made peace or attempted to in the 90s in Israel. And, you know, they weren't smiling when they did it. And it sort of felt like there wasn't a whole lot of happiness in this. These clearly aren't the best of friends, but they are coming together on this, and I'm encouraged by that. It's the kind of thing we should have been doing for years. The Republican leadership of the General Assembly has been attacking Governor Cooper and trying to undermine him sort of incessantly since even before he became governor. And so, you know, they've never agreed on a budget before. Maybe this is finally a sign that we're going to maybe have some shared governance of the state, which is what the voters have voted for.
Well, I think, you know, we have seen this division, this very difficulty in getting agreements. The governor has vetoed bill after bill after bill after bill that the General Assembly has sent over. And so it was very nice to see all of the leaders standing on the steps. Kind of interesting, I thought, was, you know, just from a logistics standpoint, it was about halfway between the governor's mansion and the General Assembly building that they met on the steps of the History Museum to reopen schools. So I thought there was a lot of symbolism, whether that was intentional or not. I think there was, and I think it was a moving moment. I think that coming together and on this particular issue to get the kids back in school, you know, as this thing has gone on, we've seen study after study that indicates that it can be done safely. We're also seeing the rollout of the vaccine and the teachers being allowed to move up to the front of the line to get the vaccine so that they can have more confidence in getting back in the classroom. And, you know, it's just, you know, I think Senator Deanna Ballard, who was the sponsor of the bill, said at some point, you know, enough is enough. And so I think that was what this did. This is what the compromise bill that they came to, coming together to understand for the kids. The kids need to be back in school. So I think it was a symbolic moment. I think it was a significant moment, more than anything, to allow the schools to open and the kids to get back where they need to be, in their classrooms, with their teachers, with their classmates.
Now, I mentioned this political love fest. In 6 years covering state government, I have never seen these figures gather together in this way. They praised each other. So on the spectrum of being a seldom seen one-off to perhaps, as Rob alluded to a moment ago, a more conciliatory working relationship, where are you on what Wednesday indicated about the future, if anything? Becky?
I'm hopeful, I think, is probably the best way to put it. I also think that the challenges that the state is going to face as we do begin to open the state up, you know, we're opening this to get the kids back in school. We need to look at businesses and getting them back. We need to get businesses open. We need to get commerce going again. We need to get people off the unemployment rolls and back to work so that they can provide for themselves and their family. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot of really serious challenges that we're going to be facing this post-pandemic. And so I'm very hopeful that we will set aside the partisan differences finances and work towards getting people back to work, getting kids back in school full time, those kind of things. So I'm very hopeful. I think the challenges call for that. And I think that, you know, one of the things that was interesting, I think, about the school reopening bill was the gathering of the moms and parents and students across the state of coming together. And, you know, most second graders don't know whether Roy Cooper's a Republican or Democrat or who controls the General Assembly. They just want to get back with their teacher and their classmates.
I'll just say, I guess I'm hopeful, also hopeful. I sensed that after the insurrection and the attempted coup d'etat in Washington, that even Senator Berger and some of the Republican leaders in North Carolina were pretty aghast at that. And made statements about ratcheting down the temperature, and that would be really good if this is a part of that, because they, I think, frankly, raised the temperature quite a bit unnecessarily over recent years. So I think I'm hopeful that this maybe is part of that. Becky's right, we've got a lot to do. There's a lot of money coming from the federal government, and there are a lot of desperate needs in education. This would be a great place to continue this working relationship. Let's get a nurse in every school. Let's spend the money to get our facilities up to grade so we can get all the kids back in school and truly comply with the Leandro ruling that requires every child to have a sound basic education. Those are the kinds of things. Boy, if we could move ahead on that, get together, actually work out a budget going forward together, it'd be great. It would be great for the state, and I think it would be voters would respond favorably to both parties.
Let's talk about something that is not happening in North Carolina, at least not yet. Across the nation, proposed changes to election law are moving through the state legislative process. Many of the efforts hinge on baseless claims of fraud. But meanwhile, this week on Capitol Hill, House Democrats passed House Resolution 1, a wide-reaching measure that they say is aimed at, in part, upending Republican efforts at the state level. It would, among some provisions, reform campaign finance as well as redistricting laws. It would also increase security, election security across the country. I'm wondering what election reforms are most needed here in our state right now. Rob, let's start with you.
I think partisan gerrymandering, ending that, probably is at the top of the list. I think the, you know, what's encouraging is that a lot of these ideas that are actually floating and have been adopted around the country either originated in North Carolina or got a lot of their initial play in North Carolina. We've had a lot of success in taking these steps of getting people to vote early, to vote by mail. We expanded on that this past year. It was enormously successful. We talked before we went on the air about this op-ed that was a joint op-ed written by Becky's old colleague Rick Henderson and Bob Hall, longtime voting rights activist in Raleigh's News and Observer this week, that talked about how this actually benefited Republicans. Unfortunately, around the country, what's happening is that the Republicans are buying into this sort of nonsense about conspiracy theories and QAnon craziness. And we see in Georgia, there may be the poster child for this. It's basically the states that Trump lost. They don't like the outcome, so they want to make it harder, for particularly for people of color, to vote. So H.R. 1 is a great start. It's the kind of thing we should pass nationally. Could help here a lot. You know, I was struck by this week in Georgia. We heard they even want to stop people from handing out bottles of water and snacks to people waiting in line to vote in that state. That's one of the Republican proposals. It's crazy. We gotta get serious about allowing people to vote, making it easier for people to vote. North Carolina has some improvements they could make. Partisan gerrymandering, doing away with it, would be at the top of my list.
Well, I think there's several things that we should look at here in North Carolina. Just after the election, after the pandemic, there were some, we relaxed some of the rules around absentee ballots and all in light of the pandemic. So I think we need to go back and look at some of those. Of some of those, we may need to continue, and some we may want to go back to the way that they were before. You know, we may see some things, Jeff, this session that might deal with cleaning up the voter rolls. I mean, it's sort of a perennial problem that we have, and really looking at that and cleaning up those voter rolls so that you get rid of the people that have died, the people that have moved, the people, you know, all of those kind of things. Also looking at the absentee ballots. I think we had record numbers of people exercising the choice to vote absentee. There were some questions about the postmark. You know, when do those absentee ballots have to be in order to count? I think that's something that we need to revisit and really talk through and decide how we're going to do that moving forward. You know, another thing that came up during this last election were people assisting voters, even going into the voting booth with them. We saw some video in some parts of North Carolina where this was happening. I think it's worth going back and looking at kind of shoring up those rules and what that looks like. And then finally, Rob mentioned gerrymandering and redistricting, because of course we're going to be having that later this year. It looks like with the census numbers being delayed with the pandemic and getting that information together, it may not be until later in the fall, but we are gonna have that. And so one of the things that I think they should do is to really look at the rules around redistricting. And many of those have come down through court cases, and to look at those and really shore those up and make sure that those are part of the system that we use, the standards for redistricting. I think, you know, when we talk about commissions and who should control it and who should do it, I think the real key, kind of the bottom line, is what are the rules around redistricting? And if the rules are clear and if they're comprehensive and if everybody understands what they are, then there's less room for, you know, for monkey business from either side or all sides of anyone dealing with redistricting. So I think to look at those standards again that were laid out in some of the court cases is really worth doing.
Rob, anything you want to address?
Well, I just think I'm for shoring things up. I think what that should mean, though, is that basically we're making the system more voter friendly, easier to vote, easier to register, easier to rescue from plutocrats and big money billionaires who want to buy our elections, and making them truly voter owned. That's what shoring up ought to mean. It ought not to mean more confusing games of gotcha when it comes to who's registered when and all that. We ought to just have automatic voter registration. People ought to be able to register right up until election day. Anything we can do to simplify voting, it's clear that it worked when we moved in that direction in the past year. May benefit Republicans in some states, Democrats in others, but it's benefiting democracy everywhere.
Let's turn our ears, if only quickly, toward next year. An independent announced this week that she's running in 2022 for North Carolina's open U.S. Senate seat. Kimmery Reinhart, a longtime Republican who changed her affiliation after the January 6th insurrection, will vie for the post. Richard Burr is leaving. Reinhart used to work for Burr on Capitol Hill. She now needs tens of thousands of signatures in order to just get on the ballot. She would be on the ballot as an independent. What has to happen for her candidacy to become truly noteworthy or significant? Becky?
Well, first of all, I think she has to be able to register and, you know, sign up to run. And I think that's something that we really need to look at. Again, talking about election reforms and how we might do things. Now, there's about a third of the voters, and this is rough. I mean, these aren't exact numbers, but it's about a third Republican, a third Democrat, and a third independent. And so the independent voters are clearly a force. And I think that we really need to look at, you know, how are we going to deal with that moving forward? How are those candidates going to play in what has been traditionally a two-party system? And I don't know what that looks like, but I think that that's something that we should look at, not just here in North Carolina. This is a trend across the country. And so I think it's going to be a real interesting thing to watch as we move towards the 2022 election and further. And again, allowing independent candidates to participate in our elections just like the members of the two major parties do.
Well, I think it's an enormous long shot. Our system is clearly rigged to prevent her from doing well, and absent some indication that she's got a lot of money I'm unaware of, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, that's the hard, cold reality of our politics, is that an independent in North Carolina maybe could somehow gain some traction if they're really, really wealthy or have some other really high-profile resource or notoriety to bring to the campaign. But the thing that I think is most noteworthy about her candidacy in North Carolina is that it indicates that there is a huge divide, that there may not be that many people who are ready to abandon the Republican Party, but they see, people like her see the Republican Party as having become the cult of Donald Trump. I mean, that's the hard, cold reality of it. They are disgusted by Trump. They're disgusted by the attempted coup d'etat. And they are aghast at the idea that so many leaders in the Republican Party have refused to separate themselves from Trump and indeed continue to embrace his outrageous behavior, his unpatriotic actions, and the fact that he was acquitted of in the impeachment trial when he was clearly guilty. So I think that's really at the heart of this. And the question is what people like Bob Orr, who've left the Republican Party, people of principle like that, who adhere to very conservative point of view on many issues with which I personally would disagree, but at least have the courage and the honesty to recognize that Trump is a cancer on our country and a cancer on the Republican Party. And so it'll be fascinating to see whether that movement continues to grow. I hope it does, but it polls indicate that she's got a real uphill fight.
At the risk of equivocating, is there anybody on the left who you would classify similarly to the way Rob just classified the former president, Donald Trump, as a cancer?
Well, I mean, I think Donald Trump is a unique character. I think that some of the ideas from the far left, the Green New Deal, the moving America towards socialism, something that a lot of people have a real problem with.
People may disagree with that point of view, but that's different from being someone who would perpetrate a coup d'etat and essentially overthrow the democracy of the United States. We can differ on issues, which is what many people on the right differ with people, but the Bernie Sanders of the world on the issues. But there's never been any hint of an indication that people like that would attempt the kind of just horrific behavior and events and corrupt actions that Trump pursued. And that is what is disgusting people like Bob Orr and so many others in the Republican Party.
It has been a year, literally, figuratively. A year ago this week, life was just kind of upended. I'm not going to rehash it all. We've lived it. It's been a remarkable year. From each of you, please, something you have learned about yourself in the last year in the face of this pandemic. Rob?
I guess I've learned to be thankful for the little things in life and to be very grateful that I'm healthy and my family is that way. I guess the thing that I take away from the pandemic that I'm most hopeful about is that I think I'm fervently hopeful that it has taught us how critical it is that we have to come together. And there are enormous crises that we face as a country, as a planet, that we can only solve if we come together. Things like the climate emergency. And I'm hoping that we learn the lesson from what we've been through this last year and the way we, in some ways, have finally come together to solve it. And we are now seeing light at the end of the tunnel, that we can bring that same spirit and that same wisdom to attacking problems like the climate emergency, social justice, the huge wealth gaps that confront our planet. Those are the kinds of things we need to tackle and take the lessons from the past year to do it.
That's a tough question. I mean, yeah, you look back over the year and it seems like it was a decade ago. The thing that struck me as we were going through it, kind of the aha moment when I realized this was really serious, is when Governor Cooper issued the stay-at-home order and closed businesses except for essential businesses, closed the schools. That was the moment that I said, wow, this is really serious. And realize kind of what we were facing. And, you know, through this year, I think that a lot of us have realized, just kind of put priorities in place of what's important in our lives, what's important for our loved ones. You know, one thing I've learned is that, you know, I can work from home and I actually really like to be at home as an extrovert kind of person. That's something I learned about myself that was a little bit surprising. I've read a lot of good books. I've written a lot of letters. I've spent a lot of time talking to friends and family members. And in a way that, you know, perhaps we didn't really take the time to do that before. So I think there's some really valuable things coming out of it. And I think that, you know, as we come out of it, the things that I'm most concerned about are the learning loss that our students are going to be having, and getting people back to work and having an economy where there are jobs for people to get back into so that they can provide for themselves, provide for their families, and, you know, begin to realize what the American dream and all the opportunities that we have in North Carolina, to be able to realize that we do have those again.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Have a great weekend.
An abbreviated version of Our Friday news roundups can be heard on WUNC, the actual radio, or on the web, of course, WUNC.org. Those run at 4:50 on Friday afternoons. Don't forget, the Tuesday Politics Pod drop is worth your while as well. This past week, we dropped an episode of Pauly. That's a special podcast series that WUNC produced last month, all about Pauly Murray, a very important and fascinating character. So if you have not yet heard any of the Pauly series, check that out soon. As for next Tuesday, we'll have an episode for you all about news deserts, as well as the role of social media as we think about the North Carolina political landscape. This episode was produced and edited by Anita Rao. She's also the host of Embodied. If you're not a subscriber or a frequent downloader or listener to Embodied, check that out wherever you grab podcasts, and don't forget about Tested, another fine offering from WUNC as well. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.